Welcome to the Azure Podcast, a series of short discussions on various topics related to the Microsoft Cloud Platform. Your hosts, Kale Teeter, Evan Basilik, and Sujit Mello, discuss a specific topic on each show to give you a high-level overview of that topic and resources to get more information should you wish to dig further. For more information on our show, please see our website at azpodcast.com.
My name is Sujit Mello. I'm a senior consultant with Microsoft in the app dev space based out of New Jersey. And on Skype with me, I have my esteemed colleague, Evan, and our special guest. Guys, please introduce yourselves.
Hey, folks. This is Evan Basilik. I'm with the Windows on Azure team supporting Azure networking and running Windows on Azure.
All right. And hey, my name is Dimitri Lylan, and I'm really happy, Sujit, you invited me on. And I'm a product manager on the Visual Studio team.
Excellent. And, you know, we're very fortunate that Dimitri and I had known each other from, his previous engagement at previous role at Microsoft.
My previous life, you could say, even.
I didn't want to say previous life, but previous role at Microsoft.
Sure.
Which was, Dimitri used to be over in the New York area a few years ago when I first started, actually. So we spent some time in the same practice in MCS. And then, of course, he moved on to bigger and better things at the mothership in Redmond, and that's where he's at now. It's fortunate that Dimitri, you had one of the early shows, right? The podcast, the Connected Show.
Yeah. So Peter Lodati, a DPE guy who's still around, me and him got together, and you know, even though we were in different teams at Microsoft, we both had the same passion, and we wanted to talk to developers about developer stuff. So we created the Connected Show. I built the website by hand, figured out how to get all the RSS stuff working, and integrated with iTunes. I published it to Azure. It was kind of fun. It was like my first real Azure project too. So that was kind of a nice bonus to having a podcast that you not only had a podcast, but you had a platform that you built for yourself, which of course came with all the responsibility to maintain it, which, you know, I have to remind myself about that. When you build something, you've actually got to keep up with it afterwards.
Exactly. Yeah, that's where it gets tough.
Yeah. Building it is fun, right? And then you're like, oh, I've got to patch it. No, boy.
Yeah, you own it for life. Dimitri is now with the Visual Studio team. And, I was just thinking, we've talked about so many topics on this podcast, but I think, the most important topic of all and the thing that makes Azure work, in my mind, I don't know about you guys, is Visual Studio. Right. I mean, without Visual Studio, there are no apps. There are no, there's nothing that runs on Azure. What do you think?
Well, we have a very, I think, unique position in the developer space, right? A lot of folks don't think about IDEs. They do development, however they do development, some kind of maybe very light IDE in Notepad, command line. There's a lot of that in the world, and people are happy. But we, as Microsoft developers, we love Visual Studio. And folks that try Visual Studio tend to love Visual Studio, so I think it's a great product. And for me, it definitely makes any sort of developer endeavor easier and worthwhile. And I love how integrated it is with Azure. So when you combine the two, I think it's not a requirement per se. You can certainly spin up a Linux VM on Azure and do something without Windows ever coming into your life. But when you're a Microsoft developer, I mean, it's just so much easier to use Visual Studio, and it's so well integrated. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, no, I agree. I remember I used to support Java for a while, and that was always the thing. It's like, oh, I got to go back to Notepad and do this there. I can't. I don't have my nice, rich IDE with, admittedly, lots of things that make it easier, right? But really, that's what makes you more productive, right, is all that. Code's just code, but it's a lot of the stuff that comes with it that makes me more productive as a developer.
I don't mind being spoiled, I'll say that right now.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Being spoiled is nice. We have so many things as developers to worry about. Why worry about, just the simple stuff? How do you get in there? How do you start writing it? How do you deploy it? How do you monitor it? And that's where, Visual Studio shines. It's getting better. Certainly plenty of room to improve, but I have not seen another IDE that could compete. And I'm biased a little bit, guys, right? Just a little bit, because I work for Visual Studio. Visual Studio pays my checks. But I've always been a Visual Studio developer, well before Microsoft had me as an employee, and certainly well before I became a part of the team here. So I think I speak from honesty over the years.
Yeah. Now, Dimitri, I've used you know, Visual Studio for my Azure development from the very early days, the Red Dog days. Let's put it that way.
Oh yeah, those you remember? you folks know out there, right?
Yeah. I mean, this is a public podcast, but I'm sure everybody knows that the code name for Azure used to be Red Dog, and I've been using Visual Studio since then. And you know, I've seen it really mature. The integration of Visual Studio and Azure started off as just a simple plugin, you know, just some project templates, and then now, if you look at it, it looks like there's a mini Azure dashboard right in Visual Studio. I mean, can you give us some kind of flavor as to, like, you know, how? What was this transition all about, and what the plan is maybe for Visual Studio as it relates to Azure?
Yeah, well, I can tell you one thing is that the people working on making sure that Azure and Visual Studio play extremely well together, they're a very passionate bunch of folks. I work with them all the time. I work with that team pretty much every month to some degree, and sometimes on a daily basis. And they're always talking about a couple of things. Number one, they want to build features people actually use. So one of the evolutions that has happened over time is they've constantly looked and asked and looked at analytics to see what are people actually doing? Are we investing in the right areas? And there's no magic bullet to this, right? There's no perfect way to create software that's 100% everybody loves. Every team, you know, you make every developer happy. That'll never happen, right? Mm-hmm. But they're trying their best to make sure that it's useful capabilities. And there's lots of, you know, feedback tools out there, whether that's user voice or people going to the forums or social media. And I hope folks out there realize just, you know, how much we're listening. We really are listening. There's reports that go up to our top management on a monthly basis, on a biweekly basis in some cases, where they're looking at what's on user voice. They're looking at what people are complaining about. They're looking at feedback from Send a Smile. So I would say that's a core thing around here. People care about what our users want, and they care about the features that they build to actually get used, and if they are being used, to be evolved to the point where they're more and more useful and stay, you know, competitive, whatever the situation is. But another part of it is also shipping in a timely fashion. It's great to build great things, but if you take forever to build them, it's just not today's world. In today's world, Visual Studio has moved to an update model, which is a huge thing by itself. I mean, we can spend a whole show talking about that. But the Azure SDK has been a standalone thing for a while now, and that part of that reason is because they can ship more often. Mm-hmm. And between updates and the SDK and between their commitment to sort of getting things right, I think we've seen a lot come to market very quickly. And if there's something that wasn't right, they've really tried to fix it quickly as well. That's been two core things.
Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sajid.
No, you go ahead, Evan.
I was going to say, so do you find, I mean, I have my history too. I started out with SQL Server Data Services. I was the original beta engineer on that for the SQL team a long time ago. But I mean, I completely agree with you guys, right? The progression over time has really been amazing. Do you guys find now that, with, you know, we've kind of restructured as a company, right? Really around, our cloud, you know, future, you know, O365 and Azure. Do you find that, you know, from the Visual Studio team that is actually, it's not just that part, but it's also just the enthusiasm around these pieces that drive these changes?
I think when you look at Satya get out there and say the things that he's saying in terms of what a company's vision is, I mean, that goes right down to the core, right? And we believe in this cloud first, mobile first world here. You'll find very few people, and you know, there's always that one guy, you know, sometimes that's me, that's like, oh no, it's not going to work. But I mean, generally speaking, people here believe that we can make this work, that this really is the future. And at the same time, we still care about our on-premises products. You know, there isn't a day goes by here that there isn't a meeting where somebody says, well, how do we make this work in on-premises, or how do we make this work in an offline scenario? We get that's an advantage too, but the cloud is the future, and Visual Studio as a team is investing a ton of money to make sure that the tools that these developers around the world are using are the best tools for the competitive landscape. Because guess what? There is competitors out there that are building great stuff. I will not say a bad thing about Amazon. You know, I'll not say a bad thing about anybody out there who's doing great things for developers. I just think we're competitive, right? And I think that's the core tenet, like the Docker stuff we announced recently.
Yep.
You know,
yep.
New Microsoft, right? Who would have thought that we would be doing something like that?
Yeah, no, I think I agree. I mean, I think the thing that always impresses me, you know, because in support, I think, Sajid, you're kind of in the same boat as well in your role as a consultant. But, you know, the engineering teams that I work with, they have a little bit of a luxury of what, VPassed? No, we don't. We don't. You know, that we ship that, right? We're done.
Mm-hmm.
For folks in Sajid's role and my role in support, I mean, I still have customers calling that are on Windows NT4. Very few, yeah. And they pay a lot of money for that privilege. But, you know, we get 2003 all the time. 2008, that's not even special to see that. And so I think it's really neat to see the things that we've invested in from a developer experience that allow people to do the new stuff, like you're talking about, the cloud and everything else. But we're still adding features to the stuff that you can do on-prem. You know, yeah. C# 6.0 is, you know, I saw an article on that the other day. I mean, we're still investing in C++. I mean, it's really amazing to see the breadth of what we're investing in.
Yeah, there's so much going on, and, you know, I'll tell you, people ask me a lot of times, you know, what do you do at Microsoft, Dmitry? I know I started off pretty light when this podcast began. I said, hey, I'm a product manager. I'm Dmitry. But what I do is I sit in between a ton of people. I mean, I don't even want to put a number on it. There's just so many people that I work with, and I just, you know, my day-to-day is just working with the PM folks, but there's developers and there's testers and there's all sorts of other folks that make all the software come together. And there's really a lot going on, and you're right, we're investing in languages. Just think about the language ecosystem. Microsoft builds first-party tools for Python. I mean, people don't realize that. We've been doing this for a long time, for many years now. We've built it so that it's super integrated with Azure, first of all, so it's very relevant to our discussion here. Just to give you that as one example, people think of Microsoft, they think of C#, VB, they think of C++. They don't realize that we've made huge investments into Python development, publishing straight to Azure, the ability to do debugging between Python and even into C++ libraries, you know, cross-language debugging, remote debugging against a Python deployed website on Azure or on premises, right? That's the beautiful thing. Or on a Linux machine. I mean, we've built all of that as Microsoft employees and published that as open source extensibility to Visual Studio for free for people out there. So yes, there's the managed languages. Yes, there's the non-managed languages, but we also have Python and we also have, you know, in managed F#. People love it in scientific community. So quite a lot going on just the languages alone.
Okay. Now, Dmitry, you mentioned the Azure SDK earlier. Right?
Yes.
And explain to us the relationship between the SDK and Visual Studio. Like,
okay.
Yeah. Are they different teams, and how do they integrate? That's always puzzled me.
Yeah, so the Azure SDK, it's not, you know, super secret knowledge, but maybe folks just don't know these kind of details. Obviously, when you work here, you forget sometimes. But the Azure SDK is a team that sits inside of the developer division. So even though there is a whole organization in Microsoft that is like the Azure organization, the Azure SDK itself is built in collaboration between the developer division and the Azure team. So those two teams work together, and the developer division, I guess, pays the bills, right, and makes sure that the Azure SDK gets built. And that team, again, pretty much just spends all day long just making sure that they have the best Azure experience ever. And there are certain capabilities that come from other teams as well. So recently, the HD Insights team, which does sit in Azure, shipped as part of the Azure SDK the HD Insights tooling, right, for Visual Studio for the very first release. So that's an example where you have great collaboration, things that probably would have never happened years ago at Microsoft. You know, again, I love the new place I work at. I would have never come here if I knew that we were on the path which we were in before. It was a tough path for me to swallow. The path was very combative internally. You know, there were things here that I just personally, you know, I'm speaking as a human being here, that I was just wasn't happy with. And I saw the change coming, and it was a great change. And now we have teams collaborating where, to the customer, it's an Azure SDK, right? They just download the Azure SDK, they install it in Visual Studio, they get all these capabilities, but behind the scenes, it is the developer division kind of driving the ship, but there's many teams contributing into it. And you also get features not only as part of Azure SDK, but also as part of updates. So it's all about getting kind of custom features to customers as quickly as possible.
Okay.
That's a big mentality there.
That's very nice. Yeah. But I just want to make sure I understand. So the SDK, does that contain the Visual Studio bits as well, the integration bits, or does the Visual Studio have that pre-baked into it? How does that work? Like, if you can install the SDK on a machine that has Visual Studio or does not have Visual Studio, correct?
So when I think about the SDK, and there's a bunch of bits and up on Azure.com, right? If you go to their download centers, there's various SDKs. But when I think about specifically the Azure SDK, that has a very particular meaning to me, and that means you have Visual Studio of some kind, mm-hmm. and we just released a free another free version of Visual Studio called Community, or if you have Express, one of the flavors of Express, or if you have Purchase Pro or above, you know, Pro, Premium, Ultimate, whichever version you might have, you'll get some functionality with of Azure with those additions. But then when you install the Azure SDK, it adds into Visual Studio more capability. Think about it as an extension to Visual Studio, right? So when I talk to people, and I do talk to customers quite a bit here in my role, one of my responsibilities is to get out there, talk to people, see what their pain points are, and I do talk to big customer accounts. And one of the questions that people do often ask when they're new to developing for Azure is, okay, well, what do I need to actually get started? So I make it very simple for them. Go get Visual Studio, whichever version you own, install it, get the latest update for it, and get the Azure SDK latest version installed. If you keep up with updates, versions, and SDK, you're good to go. You'll always have all the features. And I don't blame people when they sometimes point out to me, hey, Dimitri, I saw a feature, and I don't have it. Why? You know, like, where's the feature? And then it starts becoming an analysis move, you know. Well, which update do you have? Which version of Visual Studio do you have? Which version of SDK do you have? Yes, you know, look, we as developers get paid the big bucks because this stuff isn't easy. Yeah. But if you install those three pieces, you're good.
I see. So you really got to make sure you're up to date on the Visual Studio updates, the SDK updates, and what's the third piece you said?
And just have the specific version of Visual Studio that you're, you know, right. you need, because there will be things in Visual Studio, let's say 2015, when at RTMs eventually, that aren't in 2013, right? Everything has a ship vehicle of some sort. And if you're on the latest version across the Visual Studio, the update to that version of Visual Studio and the Azure SDK, that's pretty much the three pieces you need. Occasionally, we do release something, and it's more for like preview releases, where it's yet another extension. So we had, I think, Azure Resource Manager or something like that. We had this preview SDK, this new capability, which, again, you know, preview comes with a bigger burden. It's not supposed to be as easy. So you had to install yet another thing. You had to not just have the Azure SDK and Visual Studio end up, but you also get another extension. But again, that's more of a rare case where we're testing something. And eventually that went away, and now all those functionalities got rolled into the Azure SDK.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know about you guys, but it got to the point for me where one of my teammates and I collaborated a little bit. We wrote a PowerShell script to get the PowerShell script to get the PowerShell updates, or to look for them, and when they're there, you know, pop up the WebPI installer, because we kept finding ourselves getting burned because we're on a call with a customer and the customer says, hey, I'm doing XYZ in PowerShell and it doesn't work, and we go, oh, well, I don't have that, or hey, that works fine for me, and you know, and
it works
like
in
said,
my machine. What are you talking
about?
Yeah,
exactly. Right? And like you said, right? You end up having to ask the question on what versions you're on, and we finally said, you know what? That's okay when we ask customers that, but we should never have to say, hold on, I'm going to stop troubleshooting for 10 minutes while I install PowerShell. Right? I mean, that's just embarrassing.
Yeah. And that's part of the vision that we have with the Notification Center in Visual Studio. That's something that was added fairly recently. I really don't remember when. It's all a big blur to me, you know. I constantly stare at all these releases. I've been doing this since 2012. But we certainly have this Notification Center now, which is supposed to let you know, hey, you're a developer, you started Visual Studio, you have some SDK installed that we consider like a kind of a tier one SDK, and we'll let you know that it's out of date, there's a newer version out there available. Yeah. So we're trying to improve that. I'm one of those folks here that constantly gets into squabbles with people, telling them, look, we've got to make this easier. Acquisition and discovery and everything's got to get easier. I'll give you guys one piece of, you know, example on that front, which is to my embarrassment, for a while, we as a company like Microsoft didn't have really good release notes for Visual Studio. It was really hard to figure out what Microsoft is shipping. So I'm proud to say that I helped change that. So now when you go to visualstudio.com and you click on news, you can see every single release we have. And you can click on, let's say, preview or update for RTM or something like that, and see exactly what we shipped in that release, and links out to additional blogs, links out to partner projects, like if the Azure SDK shipped at the same time as update 4 did, then there'll be a link in there as a related download, so you can go read the release notes for that and realize that that's also available. So we're trying. You know, Dimitri's nice. Trying, many other people are trying.
Yeah, you know,
hope folks check that out.
And I don't, you know, and just to put that in context, right? Because, and I say this as somebody who, one of my roles is to help when we ship hot fixes for you know, Windows and everything is to, you know, write the content for that and publish the KVs. It is a ton of effort to write, to get that content out there, get it published, and get it maintained. For you guys to do that for each and every, you know, Visual Studio update, and not only do it internally, right, but to actually have it in a fashion that's consumable by customers, I mean, that's a ton of work.
Yeah, whenever you ship the, so we have the KB, right, where that's where our bugs are, that's where our known issues are. Then we have the release notes, that's where our new features are with screenshots and videos, and somebody has to make the screenshots and the video. Often, yeah. Before you know it, just to document all of that, that's, forget the fact that that's every single product PM and every single feature contributing, but that's 3-4 writers, some copy editors, a couple of marketing people, website publishers. I mean, you get into a very, very big V team very quickly.
Yeah, no, I agree. And to hear you guys invest in that is just kind of an indication of, I think, how we as an organization are trying to kind of go above and beyond. Right, we're not just shipping stuff, but we're shipping stuff with context for customers. Right,
our customers are so happy to hear this; they're calling you guys right now. I can
hear them. yes, they are calling me as we speak.
Either that or that support.
But you know, I think Evan mentioned something which I just wanted to ask, which is PowerShell. Right, that's yet another. I don't know if you call it an SDK, but that's yet another vehicle for doing development in Azure. What's the how is that updated? Is that a separate package now?
Yeah, I believe that's a separate package. That's a place where I stumbled over it a couple of times in my world here, just not recently enough to know exactly. But I do know that there is a PowerShell SDK. They do update it. There is some commonality between the SDK that gives capabilities to Visual Studio versus that SDK behind the scenes. But I'm not familiar enough to give you a lot of detail. I just know that is a separate thing you have to get, yes.
Okay. And you can use Visual Studio to create PowerShell scripts? Is that something that was always supported?
I think it certainly is. What's the word I want? It'll highlight and kind of visually show you everything. But I don't think it's natively PowerShell aware from a, you know.
You need that ISC tool, whatever that.
There's a couple of third party tools. I use PowerGUI personally.
Okay.
Because it really makes it intuitive. It's no Visual Studio, but it's really good for what it does with PowerShell. I would love to see Visual Studio kind of adopt PowerShell.
Why doesn't Visual Studio allow you to build PowerShell scripts? I don't understand. It does support VBScript and other forms of scripts, right?
I think everything comes down to prioritization, right? The magic word. Why doesn't Visual Studio do X?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I agree. I'd love to see Visual Studio do more PowerShell. For all I know, it does, and somebody's going to beat me up later and say, Dimitri, what, you didn't know we do this? But if it doesn't, the simple explanation is, first of all, there's not enough customers screaming that they need it. If there is a voice in the community that says we want it, I think our management would be more seriously looking at it. And there's also, you know, I think some degree of, you know, you've got to prioritize. Even when people want something, sometimes you just got to say, look, people want it, but we have to focus on other things. And like you guys were saying a minute ago, we're doing so much already. It's kind of crazy.
Okay. Cool.
At some point, you run out of hours you can cut from sleep. You know?
No, there's unlimited money and unlimited time for everything, Dimitri.
Oh, okay.
You're talking about.
Oh, you know, me and you should talk more. I've got to figure out how to get access to that.
Now, if I may, I just wanted to extend this conversation to the Visual Studio SDK itself, right? And you all know that's a different thing altogether. That's something that you would use to actually write an extension for Visual Studio. Like, I guess, a VSIX package, for example.
Yeah.
Does that support, can you actually extend the Azure components themselves using that? Just a random question that I had. But is there some facility to extend the Azure plugins into Visual Studio?
So here's the reality of it. Visual Studio, extensibility is a very complicated topic, and I'm no SME, so I'm not going to tell you for sure, but I can sort of look at what's out there and make some assumptions. So let's look at the Python SDK. So the Python developer tools for Visual Studio allow developers to install something from CodePlex that gives them all of a sudden file new project Python, right? Mm-hmm. Awesome. You can make a website, whatever. It then allows you to say publish and select Azure and publish it to Azure. It then allows you to attach to Azure website running Python and start debugging. So I can only surmise from all of that that yes, you could use extensibility to take something that you're doing out there and make it connected to Azure, make it work with Azure and capabilities such as debugger and et cetera. Right. There's a lot you can do out there. And the beautiful thing about extensions like Python is that the extension itself is open source. So you can actually go in there and see how they implemented it. Nothing is hidden. So if folks really are interested, I know we're interested in more people getting into extension development. I can tell you that there's a lot of talk here how to make that even easier. But today there are some really great examples in Python, SDK, Node, SDK. These are all developer tools, extensions that give you language capability, Azure integrated, and all the source that does that is available for you to look at.
Excellent. So, what are the plans, the future plans for Visual Studio? As it relates to the Azure space, is there anything you want to share with our listeners?
Well, and let me extend that question as well, because you see more and more. I don't know if integration is the right term, but you see Visual Studio Online starting to surface things that traditionally were only in Visual Studio.
Multiple questions here. good questions. Yeah. So let me start with Sajid's question, Evan. You can banter on the second one because it's a good one too. So the first one is, what is the future of Visual Studio? Well, Dimitri has to put on his good corporate citizen hat and say, I'm not here to make any announcements. But what I can say is that it's obvious we're working to finalize Visual Studio 2015. And when we do, there's probably going to be another SDK that ships as well. I mean, it's just not a secret anymore. If you look at how we're shipping the SDK, we tend to ship one every so often. We shipped one at the Connect event, which I'm so happy with how well that event went by. But we'll have another activity where Visual Studio will launch whenever that is. We'll do more for Azure inside of Visual Studio 2015, of course. Probably everything that we're doing is more or less been announced, already for all the posts and blogs and releases of bits that we did. But we'll have more Azure SDK capabilities. And there's quite a few things that we're working on just to sort of finalize these releases. We've just had some major releases that we want to get through preview all the way out to RTM. And that's a big focus. And I hope that answers your question, at least a little bit.
Yep. Thanks.
Okay. But Evan, the next one is a good one, right? Visual Studio Online. Hey, what is that all about and how does that all relate? So when I think about Visual Studio Online, let me take a step back and say, hey, maybe somebody out there listening to this podcast has no clue what Visual Studio Online is.
Yeah,
well, you might have heard of Team Foundation Service. That's what we called it when we first shipped it. Or you might know Team Foundation Server on premises that you have installed at your organization. So think of Visual Studio Online as Team Foundation Server in the cloud, right? Completely Microsoft hosted, built on top of Azure, in the cloud, ALM solution. But it's more than just ALM, right? It's your release management solution as well now. At the Connect event, we announced that release management was available in the cloud. It is the load testing capability from the cloud. So it's really bringing a lot of capabilities that tend to be on-premises server backend capabilities out to the cloud and making it accessible for both use for whatever you want, but also highly integrated with Azure itself. So you can go ahead and do a build in Visual Studio Online of your website and have it push that website changes to an Azure test environment of some sort of website. So some really cool stuff in that space. And then you start looking at Visual Studio Online, you're like, okay, so I mean, what is it physically? I mean, what is this Visual Studio Online thing? Well, as a developer, you experience it in one of two ways. First, you can go to the website, right? You can go to your team project. You go to visualstudio.com. You log in. You go to your team project URL, specifically maybe if you know it offhand. And you are now part of your team portal. You can see your work items, your source code, your builds, your releases. You've got your test scripts in there. You've got all this stuff right available for you in the dashboard. You've got application insights for app analytics. It's all one integrated solution. And it's all available for you as a cloud service, right? Another way to consume those Visual Studio. You can go and say, hey, Visual Studio, I want to connect to a TFS instance, and here's a cloud URL, right, a internet address that connects you up, and now you can look at your queries and your source code and do all of that through the Solution Explorer from the Team Explorer inside of Visual Studio. So that's what it is. That's what it gives you. And it is very, very much built in Azure, integrated with Azure, and we see the two sort of kind of side by side. You know, Azure is a cloud platform, and Visual Studio Online is built on top of Azure, but it's also connected to the cloud platform where it makes sense. And it's also, you know, Visual Studio Online is also bringing capabilities out to the cloud, which in the past have been traditionally only part of Visual Studio. And one of those, for example, the ability to edit source code. So now you can go to Visual Studio Online and hit edit on a file, and you won't get IntelliSense, but you're going to get color coding and tabbing, all of that stuff will work, and it will sync back up, let you check it back in, and be available in your next get latest in Visual Studio, right? So there's some interesting things happening there.
Yeah, I remember, you know, I was saying before I started in the I'm going to call it SQL Azure because I just can't stop calling it SQL Azure even though we've changed the name.
That's a hard one even for me.
Yeah. SSDS didn't stick, but SQL Azure stuck. I remember, you know, Visual Studio Online is one of the things that sits on top of is SQL Azure. And, you know, that was kind of some of my first exposure to it was having support cases, internal support cases from that team coming across. And it was great because I remember they pushed the platform for what it could do. They helped, you know, it was dog fooding, but it was dog fooding on a production sense, right? We had this production, you know, publicly exposed service that was sitting on top of our other services, and it really became this really nice, cycle, right? It's pushing the Azure SQL database to get better, but Azure SQL database is also helping to drive improvements in, you know, the overall ecosystem. I mean, it really becomes this fortuitous cycle across the board.
It helps everybody, for sure. Nothing like running something real that you care about on top of another service that you also care about, and that leads to both sides benefiting.
Yeah, we've always done that in Microsoft historically internally, but it's a whole different ballgame when your warts are exposed publicly than when it's, well, I can't get email today because I'm on our, you know, our dog food exchange server. It's a whole different ballgame from that versus...
I love our dog food exchange servers.
I'll have to confess, I don't, in support, I'm not on them anymore because I got yelled at by too many customers. It's a whole different ballgame from that versus, hey, we're charging somebody $5 a month or whatever whatever the price is for whatever service they're using, and it's not working because of, it's, you know, got a dependency on some other service that is having a problem. Right. I mean, it
ramps a lot of dependencies.
Yeah.
Right. It's not like it's one thing. I mean, when you talk about Visual Studio Online, I will be right away transparent and say Visual Studio Online has gone down a bunch of times. Right. Even in recent history, they've had outages. Nothing super major, but they've had blips. And every time they have a blip, Brian Harry goes out there and he puts a detailed blog post that says, today, you know, we had an incident. The incident's related to XYZ thing in Azure or in our code or some combination of stuff. And guess what? Afterwards, what folks don't see on the outside is what happens internally. I do get to see it. It's kind of fun. Even more fun because I'm not the guy who broke anything, right? It's never fun to be that developer is like, yeah, your thing took down a service. Good job. Good job, dude. Happens. But I'm not that person. So I get to watch from the side, and they have some really passionate discussions and retrospectives and implementation of, like, this is not going to happen again. You know, if we can help it, this will not happen again. And not only it won't happen again, every other team that's building large services, we're talking to them, right? There's a lot of internal dialogue where people are sharing sort of the pains of why things happen, and if it can make, let's say, SQL Azure better, they'll go and make SQL Azure better. You know, there is that mentality that the team that sort of took the hit, even if it wasn't their hit, will say, well, how can we help other people not run into the same problem as well? And there is this cycle because of that really benefits. It's also why it's also not a secret that we're moving to like one engineering system, right? Brian Harris talked about it, where people internally are moving to Visual Studio Online. People internally are moving to the cloud. We're not just asking our customers to take the leap of faith. We're doing it ourselves, and we're gonna burn a little in the process, and it's gonna make better products. Software isn't perfect, service isn't perfect, but I mean, I'm so happy to see the way they deal with it, the way they deal with the problem, the retrospective, and the solutions afterwards. And everybody else in the industry has problems too. Nobody's perfect, but guess what? Internally, when you host something, how many times? I mean. I get so frustrated. This really, you know, grinds my gears a little bit. When people kind of get on the high horse and say, well, you know, if this was hosted by me, that would never happen. Oh, come on. Come on.
Yeah.
I was there in the blackout, okay, guys? The big blackout on the East Coast in a server room where the backup solution, the power generator, that day they realized could only power one server out of 17 racks. Oops, yeah, they kind of didn't scale their power backup. I mean, they fixed that eventually, but I mean, you don't have that kind of problem when you're in on the cloud, you're replicated, you might be down, but your data is not lost, you might be down, but somebody else is fixing it, even at 2 a.m. You know, there's all sorts of things that don't happen in companies, and people forget that could happen to them, especially when you're pushing so hard to get the latest bits out there for people and functionality that also in the enterprise, how many times does this Team Foundation server or something that get updated, you know, needs for a regular way, and you're stuck in like 2010 version, yeah. And the cloud just gives that to you. Lots
yeah, I was going to say, that's the thing that always jumps out at me. I've been in support for a long time now, and I can't tell you, we actually talk about the distribution of cases in the cloud world versus the on-premises world. In the cloud world, there's ones we know about that are pretty easy, or there's brand new ones we've never seen, and they're really, really hard. And that's it. In the on-premises world, we have everything from, hey, super easy, we fixed it a million times, to, hey, here's a hot fix. You know, but we make a living in the middle of, here's hot fixes, apply these patches, that solves your problem. And we feel really dumb sometimes when it takes us a week or two to find a known issue that, oh, once I get the data, I know it's fixed by this hotfix. All those cases have gone away in the cloud world.
Yeah, there's right. advantages there. There's no like there's no magic, right? There's, none of this is magical. Everything will have problems. Everything will be perfect. Yeah. Everything will have ups and downsides. But every time I look at the world, I mean, unless you are the NSA, unless you are a government or you have HIPAA requirements, I mean, there's certain cases where I get it, why you wouldn't go to the cloud or you create your own private cloud. And even there, Microsoft has options now. But I mean, for most companies out there, the cloud just makes a lot of sense. Visual Studio makes it easy. All the capabilities and the tools are there pretty much for free as long as you have Visual Studio, even with community. I mean, there's so much free goodness out there. MSDN subscribers get Azure benefits. Do you know how few of them take advantage of it? I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
There's a lot of room for people to get out there, try the cloud. And guess what? At the end of the day, you don't have to use the cloud for everything. You could use the cloud for your dev test environment. You can use your cloud just for your ALM solution. You can pick and choose and get out there and give it a shot. It's probably cheaper. It's probably more stable. It's more, in most cases, it's probably more secure than whatever you're doing if you're a small shop. Definitely, the mechanisms behind the scenes are amazing. There's so many people keeping this thing secure, online, available, monitored, and supported when things do go wrong because, you know, like you said, they do go wrong even in the cloud occasionally.
That's great. That was a quite active discussion over there, guys. I like that.
Yeah,
Dimitri's got some passion around this. It's great
to
hear.
I can see that.
I have opinions. I'm opinionated.
See, that's why I got him on the show. This is great, Dimitri and Evan. Anything else you guys want to share or talk about? I mean, we've already been on it for a while. I don't want to keep Dimitri much longer.
This was great, Dimitri. Thank you very much for coming on.
Yeah, well, I appreciate it. And, you know, I hope folks get out there and just, you know, take a look at all the great stuff we're doing. You know, again, my passion, one of them is just to make it much easier for folks to acquire information. You know, there's so much going on. How do you get through the noise? And just at some point in time when you have the time to take a stop and say, I want to understand what's in a release. I want to understand what's been out there, what's happening. And we're trying to create a lot of standards. You know, the Visual Studio Team blog is where I hope people are following. We are trying to standardize in such a way that every single release is announced there. We have these release notes on visualstudio.com/news. We have videos that we're doing on Channel 9 for every major RTM release now, every major update. You guys probably, you know, if you watch Channel 9, you've probably seen my face occasionally on there. Well, that's why, because I'm out there doing these videos. We're really trying to keep you informed, and we're looking for feedback. If people have feedback out there of, like, how can we better communicate to you? How can we better take advantage of your feedback? Or how can we help you understand what's out there in the release? I want to hear about it. People can find me very easily. I'm sure in the show you guys can link to my Twitter
Absolutely.
Alias and such,
yeah.
And we'll get folks reaching out.
And do send us any links that you wish to share. We'll put them in the show notes. You know, if there's, like you mentioned, some of the websites just now, so we can always put them in the show notes, okay?
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Great. Thanks a lot, Dimitri, and for your time. And Evan, great talking to you, as always.
Yeah, sounds good. We'll talk next week. Thank
All
you,
right, guys.
Thank you so much, guys. Have a great evening.
Take care. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the show. If you have any comments or questions, please use our Twitter handle at Azure Podcasts. Background music has been taken from ccmixter.org under the Creative Commons license. Thank you, and see you next time.